This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia, and it's my pleasure to be with you again tonight. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-888-429-5471. And we also have the People Speak virtual radio auditorium room on paltalk.com, which is the largest chat program in the world where you can join to listen and interact. So this is a special show tonight, and our guest tonight is Ellie Sophia Brown, and she's a personal friend and someone that I am actually really excited to get to know better through this show with you as our audience, whether you're here live right now or as you listen in later. So let me tell you a little bit about Ellie Sophia Brown. Ellie Sophia Brown's degrees in psychology and counseling give her a unique artistic perspective. After dedicating almost two decades working in the fields of social services and mental health, she left her private practice in 2014 to pursue an artistic career in photography. After many years of offering support in moments of struggle and pain, she enjoys celebrating the moments of love and new beginnings that she now captures in her images. Although photography is a new career for Ellie, it is not a new passion. Ellie's love for photography began as a young girl, assisting her grandfather in his work as a wedding photographer. Now as an award-winning photographer herself, with published images in several local magazines, she sees photography as a way to advocate for those who might otherwise not be seen. Her current work is titled Out of Many, One Community, focusing on the diversity in her city, and is being exhibited throughout the Indianapolis area. So welcome, Ellie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited, as I said, to get to know you through this and just to see what kind of organic conversation we can have. So let's just begin by you sharing what your life was like growing up.
Well, I could say so much about that. A lot of, I guess, what made me the person I am today is being a biracial Mexican American who grew up right along the border. In fact, I grew up in San Diego, so close to the Mexican border that you could literally see Mexico from where I lived. I laugh for people that are familiar with California. If you get on the freeway and you get to the road that says last American exit before you leave the country, that was pretty much my exit. So I grew up right along the border and really had one foot in each country. I had half my family who, from my dad's side, were Caucasian, and my grandparents lived, in fact, my grandfather, who was the wedding photographer, lived about 15 minutes north of us in San Diego. And then on my mom's side, they all, for the most part, lived in Tijuana, Mexico, which was right across the border to the south. And my grandparents lived in Tijuana, about 15 minutes south of us. So I spent about half my time in the United States and about half my time in Mexico. In fact, we even had a home in Mexico as well that we'd sometimes stay at. So I really was split between the two countries and the two sides of me. So I guess that kind of defines who I am. I'm very much kind of okay with being a very different different parts of me and just accepting all of those sides, similar to having such a different background in psychology and counseling and mental health and then going to photography. It feels like such a big change, but I guess I've always embraced many different sides of myself.
You know, I was also born, I had that same border, you know, border crossing experience. I was made in my mom's womb in San Diego, and then a couple weeks before I was due to be born, my dad lost his job and the place that he was at, and he crossed back into Tijuana, and that's where I was born. And, you know, that's what had set me up for the immigration process. And, you know, I know I met you when I spoke at a vigil in December of 2016. Yeah. And for me, that was an important turning point in my own reinvention after many years of hiding. And I know that's where we connected, and we both realized we're Mexican-American women who've navigated the borderlands very differently. So what do you think, as you're sharing that about your life growing up, has been the most challenging, you know, having lived half your time in Mexico and the U.S.?
You know, I talked about this recently with a group, and I realized it might have been insensitive of me that I really just saw it as a line in the dirt, because again, I was split half my time in either country. And for me, it was just going to my grandma's house in Mexico or going to my grandma's house in the United States and going to my house, you know, in one country or my home in the other. So whereas I, you know, crossed that border without it having a huge impact on me personally, I need to be, I think, more sensitive to the fact that that's certainly not the case for a lot of the people in my community. And so for you know, just speaking from my own experience, I think what my interesting take on it that might be different than other people is that it, you know, to me, it truly is just a line in the dirt. And I have a really hard time wrapping my mind around the idea that people really want to make it almost a war zone wall of separation. Because to me, the two countries and the two sides of me are fluid. And I don't understand this, you know, this belongs here and this belongs on this side. The idea that there needs to be this, you know, strict line, I think for me personally, it would be like separating half of who I am. So I love hearing your story. And I think so much of what's been happening currently in our country has really made me even put more thought into the fact that there needs to be more conversations and more understanding of so many different views of that border and what that means to them.
And then thinking about those conversations that are happening politically about DACA recipients, for example, and, you know, going back into the shadows, you know, how are you feeling right now as you're connecting? I know you shared with me that, you know, more and more now you're coming out more openly with your identity.
Right. It has affected me very much. I think for a long time, and similar to what I've described, being biracial, a lot of times it's hard to identify with one half of you or the other. You know, again, you're not necessarily, you know, I wasn't always fully accepted by Mexicans, and I'm not always fully accepted by Caucasians. And so I kind of have this other feeling, and which is really common, I think, for anybody who's biracial, no matter what the culture is. And so for a long time, I actually had a hard time feeling like I could represent in any shape or form the Mexican community, because again, my experiences have been different than a lot of the people that I speak with. But because of everything that's happened politically, I feel like every voice is needed, and my voice has worth as well. It may be different, but it's still another voice joining the conversation. And I think we all need to feel like our voice is heard. And so going back to what you said, as far as, you know, everything that's been brought up, again, it's interesting that when I'm around a lot of Caucasian friends, they don't necessarily see me as also Caucasian. They see me as Mexican. And so a lot of times, right now with everything going on, I definitely feel, you know, that separation, and I feel like a lot of that rhetoric that's being said about the Hispanic and Mexican community, it's personal. It feels like it's personal attacks on me, and it hurts. You know, it hurts deeply when you hear about your community being blamed and targeted for things, you know, that aren't true and don't really represent you. So it has, it's hurt, and it certainly made me an advocate where maybe I wouldn't have stepped up and played that role quite in this way before. But during these times, I feel like, again, this is not the time to sit back. This is the time to come forward and be strong and communicate and help people understand all the different perspectives that are out there.
Yeah, and I want to definitely hone in on a story that you've shared. We'll get back to that. And just for those who are listening, this is The People Speak, and I am Elizabeth Valencia talking to our guest, Ellie Sophia Brown, and we're having a conversation about her upbringing and what it's like to navigate the Mexican-American identity. And so, Ellie, you shared with me a story that was profound for you when it came to the, you know, this part of you, this being Mexican-American and being invisible. Would you share that with our audience?
Yes. Yes, I shared this once before when we had an opportunity to be on a forum together. And it was my first experience of having someone really be overtly bigoted towards me. And again, where I grew up right along the border, it was primarily minorities. I had the high school that I attended was 3,000 students, but it was pretty close to the border. And so the Caucasian students actually were included in the other category because there were so few. It was about 99% minority Mexican and Filipino. And so my first experience of really being around predominantly Caucasian community was when I went off to college in Orange County, California, and it was, I believe it was about the opposite, 98% white, or somewhere along there. So it was in the 90%. And so I had never been exposed to that before. And it was kind of a culture shock, even though I'd, you know, spent primarily my entire life in the United States, I'd still not been around a community like that before. And so it was a little bit of a culture shock. I joked that I thought I was tall. I'm 5'2". I thought I was tall until I went up to college and realized, oh my God, how come nobody told me I was short? So anyways, one of my first experiences at college was an icebreaker that I guess I have a couple stories of icebreakers that happened at that college, but this one in particular was one where they asked us to pick a color and to, you know, team up with someone and pick a color or get to know them. And once you get to know them, decide what color they would be and why. And it was supposed to be, you know, a positive experience as far as getting to know each other. And so I took it very innocently And I said that the girl I was paired up with was red because I thought she was elegant. And she apparently took it a little bit more literally and said I was brown because she felt that I was the kind of person who would always blend into the background. Somebody would never notice. And at the time, I remember being extremely hurt, but more so shocked because I had never had to confront such racism, you know, blatant racism to my face. In what she said, I don't think she meant it to hurt me. That truly was what she felt of me, that I was, you know, someone who disappears into the background, which honestly, as I look back at it now, does describe the Mexican community for a lot of the culture. We blend into the background for them. You know, we're the ones mowing their lawns or cleaning their bathrooms or, you know, doing these jobs that they don't even want to see. And so to them, Mexicans are not seen. You know, we get the work done, but we don't get noticed. And it was a shock. It was a shock to realize that that's how people perceived me. And it was throughout, I would say, my college years, I experienced that. And then I started to get used to that as the years went on, that people often say really crude and mean things. A lot of times, again, not necessarily because they're trying to offend me. I think there's a difference between being, you know, overtly racist and having racist views or ignorant views and just not being exposed, which why is another reason, again, I really promote having the conversation, because I think the people that don't necessarily mean to offend and are just really ignorant can change when they're exposed and they meet people and they realize that I certainly don't blend into the background. I'm certainly someone who has a strong will and a strong opinion. And I'm usually someone you end up noticing.
And thinking about that story and your borderland experiences, has that formed a part of what has led you from counseling to photography? I know you mentioned your grandfather and his wedding photography and growing up around that. But this part of your identity, how has it inspired your work? For example, the Out of Many project, One Community, that you did.
Well, I think when it comes to photography in general, for me, it has been a work of passion. It certainly financially wasn't necessarily the smartest move to go from a pretty secure career to anything in the art field, but it's certainly me following my passion. And so I'm enjoying every minute of being able to be inspired and let that artistic side out of me. And certainly just because I started this new pursuit doesn't mean that all of those years of advocating and helping people would just go away. It's still very much still, you know, a part of me. And so after I really started to see, the disconnect that's happening right now in our country, I wanted to do something. And so with my unique background, I thought maybe I could come up with something unique to help people see what I see. And so that project in general was inspired by, a moment I had online, actually, when things were getting really ugly, and I pleaded with people and said, you know, with all of this hatred and all of this ugliness that's being poured out, if you hear those things and you see my face, would it make a difference? You know, when you hear chanting about a wall and Mexicans being all rapist and all of these comments, if you see my face and you know me and we have a relationship, does that make you kind of pull back a little bit and think, oh, wait, I know Ellie and Ellie's a good person and these things aren't true about her. Maybe this isn't true. Maybe this is not the right way to think about it. And so, with that thinking, I was inspired to then create a project that showed more than just my face, but a lot of people's faces that can make people stop and think. Because my thought was, if you look at all these people and really stare in their eyes of people that are different than you, and just take a moment to soak in their vulnerableness in the images, does it impact you? Do you then, you know, in my case, being Mexican American, if my image were part of it, would you then look and say, oh, wow, you know, this person is not those things that they're saying. This person seems different. Maybe what all these things that are being said about Mexican Americans is not true. And my project incorporated actually 16 participants from all backgrounds, from the autism spectrum, from the LGBTQ community, all different religions, Muslim, Catholic, Christian, atheist, Jewish. There's immigrants. There's all different nationalities. I have someone from the deaf community represented. I really wanted a good mix of my city, Indianapolis, to be represented so people could look at those people, you know, and say, these are my neighbors. And here's a moment where I may not have the opportunity to meet them in person, but in this private moment of looking at this image, I can get to know this person. And those participants really were vulnerable for the images. We took some really powerful images, in my opinion, that and they shared who they were, not only through the image, but they actually each chose a word that describes them and then had it written somewhere on their bodies. And so you really have to interact with the image as part of the project. And again, that was my combining, going back to your question, with my love of photography and seeing photography as really an art form and my background in advocating for people.
And for this project, you interviewed people who were from the age of 7 to 89. What was it like to have that 7-year-old in front of you and the 89-year-old? What stories, you know, came with that?
You know, it is amazing. One thing that always makes me laugh is whenever somebody goes through something where they think they're going to help other people, if it's a missionary trip or if it's a humanitarian effort, they always come back with the same story that they were the ones that ended up really changing. You know, they thought they were going to go help all these people and they're the ones that were really impacted. And I think that's true anytime we do something where we make the effort to help someone else, that of course we are changed in the process as well. And I came at this project with the same mindset of my counseling background, that I'm not there to change people. I'm there to listen and I'm there to reflect. And so I really left it open-ended, and I just invited anybody who was interested to be part of the project to come forward. And originally, it was supposed to be a very small project. It was supposed to just be for a local neighborhood magazine. And then I started having people, you know, write me and say, well, you know, I don't live in your neighborhood, but I'm part of the deaf community, or I'm part of the Muslim community, or I'm a Syrian refugee, and a Syrian immigrant. And I, at that moment, I couldn't turn anybody away. And so it just kept growing because I was so excited to get to know these people and hear their story. And everything was extremely organic. Again, I tried to stay out of the way of the path that it just kind of led us. And so the only instruction I gave for people was, you know, to write me if you were interested and to choose one word that described you. And I gave no instructions as far as what that word should be. And so they all came up with just the most interesting, you know, ways of describing themselves. And certainly you'll, you know, I know we're going to share my website at the end, but on my website, it has all of the images of the participants and a little background of who they are, sharing. And I would encourage everybody to go there and interact with it. But they all just, as I said, made themselves really vulnerable. And in the process, of course, I got to know an amazing group of people, that I'm just so proud that I was able to tell their story.
And how did you get the 7-year-old to be a part of this project?
Well, she's absolutely adorable. The 7-year-old is actually was born with a rare disease and has been through countless surgeries. Her mom actually wrote me, and her name's Kaya, and said that she wanted to be part of it, that her mom had heard about it and had told her daughter about it, and she needed a photo shoot, let me tell you. She's a little girl that was ready to pose for the camera. Her smile is absolutely contagious, and her word was strong. So we did the photo shoot with her, and she is the definition of strength, even at only 7 years old. Just an amazing, amazing girl and an amazing mom. Both of them really had a big impact on me. But yes, the mom was the one that really was interested. And again, everybody just chose to participate. This was not something where there was any compensation for them. I just really asked for volunteers, and people, I think similar to myself, when I put that post online, people wanted to be seen. People wanted their stories told. They wanted to feel like they had a voice, and they felt like it was an opportunity to share their voice. And some people came in really nervous. Other people were raring to go and excited. But again, and the images, every image is different as far as where the word is written and how they pose. I would say for 95% of it, we just let it happen organically. So they came in and I asked them if they had any ideas as far as how they wanted their image to look. And if they didn't, then we just kept working together until we came up with something. And so really, I think the project is their voice and their face and them being able to tell their story, which I hope has an impact. I hope people stop and give it the time that those participants deserve, because they really have put themselves out there. And I think we all can learn from them, not just me.
Yeah, I think this is a great time for many of us to step outside of our comfort zones and acknowledge the intersectionality. Even with Kaya, who's a 7-year-old in your project, you have her as multiracial, African-American, Caucasian, Italian, and Native American. And that touches so much, right, of the interconnection that we find here in the United States. And her quote on your website says, I'm assuming this is her quote, "You have to be strong to survive this world. You have to keep your heart and your head strong. Oh, and your smile strong too." And that's her quote, yeah?
Yes. In fact, her mother had given a quote originally, and I said, I love it, but you know, she's the participant. I want something directly from her. And so when she came back with it, she's like, well, it kind of sounds so, you know, she wrote it herself. It sounds like a 7-year-old wrote it, but I was like, I love it. Perfect. Because it's her, and you can see as you read the quote and you see the smile in the image, you know, it came straight from her. She's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
She's amazing.
Yeah, and you're right. Her smile is very contagious. And so, for anybody listening right now, I'll go ahead and share your website in case, you know, during our break they'd like to visit it. Ellie's website where you can find this project is elliesophia.com. That's ELLIESOPHIA.com. And on the left side menu, you'll see Out of Many, One Community. And if you click that, you'll be able to enter the gallery and you can find Kaya and the rest of the participants of Ellie's project. And so with that, I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia, and we will be right back with our guest, Ellie Sophia Brown, and any audience questions after this message break.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You're listening to The People Speak, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia, and we're back with our guest, Ellie Sophia Brown, tonight. And we just finished talking about, you know, one of your projects here in Indianapolis called Out of Many, One Community. And so let's move on to this new project that you're being invited to be a part of now, which is a symposium called Religion, Spirituality, and the Arts Seminar. You want to tell us a little bit about what that is?
Thank you. Yes. This is a new direction, and it's a really interesting project. There were six local artists chosen to be part of this, and it is actually led by Rabbi Sandy Sasso. And again, they have an interview process, an application, and they choose just a few artists. And the way it's set up is it's about six sessions, and we are required to do a lot of readings and then go to these classes and have discussion. And it's all about religion and spirituality and how that impacts the arts. And so as a result of these readings and these classes, the idea is that we will be inspired to create a unique art piece as a result. And Rabbi Sasso's thought is that historically, art was inspired by religion and spirituality. And so she feels that for the most part, has been lost in the modern day, and that art rarely reflects that as it used to. And so she is hoping by having these classes that she can inspire artists to then create new art that will reflect, obviously, something that's very personal for her and her religion. And so she has brought together, as part of the application process, they really want to bring a diverse group. It's not necessarily all spiritual people, but people that are interested and they feel have a unique perspective that will then add to the artwork that's created. And then as a result, they have an exhibition where they They have all the art available to be seen by the community that'll take place in February. So my classes actually start this Thursday. I've just finished the last of my readings in preparation. And so I did as I was told. I've tried not to prepare very much as far as what I think the art will look like, because I'm going to try to be inspired by what the classes bring and then see what's created. So it feels a little insecure because I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I'm going to let it lead me, and hopefully something great will be produced at the end.
Yeah. And I'm sure people who are listening in, I know we have actually a couple of listeners from Indianapolis right now listening in, are going to be excited to follow your work with that. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, will you give us your first name, your location, and your question or your comment for Ellie?
Ellie, I was wondering, what do you think of Elizabeth? Is she a good host or what?
She's fantastic. I am a fan of Elizabeth well before this conversation, and have been following her journey. And I consider it a great privilege to be interviewed.
You know, Ellie, I was just talking to the station manager, and we think she's a great host too. But Ellie, I had a question for you, and maybe you've discussed this or touched upon it briefly. What do you think of President Trump? I personally think he's one of the most blatantly racist presidents we've had in a long time. I do not like him.
You know, I certainly have strong opinions, and anybody that follows me is familiar with that. But I think at the same time, he certainly brought out a lot in people. And some people, I think he's brought out some racism and hatred that may have been kind of hidden below the surface that now they feel the green light to expose. And for people like me who may have sat in the background a little bit, it's also brought out my activism, which I didn't necessarily know I had in me. So he brings out maybe the best and the worst in people. Not someone who I agree with a lot of what he says. And I think a lot of what he says is very hurtful. But again,
if I may, what you said, it brought out a lot of activism in you. In what way have you become socially or politically more involved in groups or your community now since Trump became president? I don't know if you touched on that.
No, we haven't. My husband is military and has had his career, both civilian and active duty, has moved just around the country and the world. And so we've moved quite a bit. And right before, maybe a year and a half before the election, we had moved to Indianapolis. And I, after maybe 10 moves in our marriage, I was kind of a little bit of a wallflower as far as not necessarily putting myself out there in a new community and starting over again. I was a little tired of doing it, you know, and the idea of doing it one more time. And then the election happened, and I needed my community, and I needed to feel like I was part of good, because I was seeing so much ugliness. And so it pulled me out of my shell. And before I knew it, I was traveling to Washington, D.C. with my then 12-year-old boy to march on Washington, and I really haven't slowed down since. I have participated in lots of rallies and lots of marches and lots of sit-ins, and certainly an area I used to be intimidated about calling my congressman, and now I have a month be dialed. So
that's what I was going to ask. Have you gotten to touch with anybody, a part of the Hispanic Congressional Caucus or something like that?
You know, as far as that specifically, no. But I certainly do know, you know, my local officials, and I was part of a Tuesday rally that used to take place every every week at Todd Young's office, and I certainly got to know his staff there as I would come up to the office and sit for a while every week. And but again, my take on things, I want to have conversations with people, and that I took that as an opportunity to, again, meet people, to have conversations with people, to have them hear my view. And I'm certainly willing to hear anybody else's view as well. Again, I think that's where change takes place.
Thank you so much, Ellie, and good job, Elizabeth. Continue, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And thank you, Ellie.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and bye. And so touching more upon that, I mean, I think we're seeing more and more people coming out for the very first time and really getting to tread the waters and trying to find their element, right? Of where do I belong? Where is my calling, my purpose? How do I make those phone calls? What, right? Like just the very basics of how does the system work? What do you think as a Mexican American woman who has also been reinventing herself, what do you think is one of the biggest challenges for women who are, you know, biracial or Mexican American?
You know, I think one of the areas that I was disappointed in after the election is I really thought the Hispanic community was going to come out of the woodworks and go vote. And I thought that all the negativity that was being said about specifically Mexicans would make us show up. And when the polls showed that that was not the case, that was heartbreaking for me personally. And I know that that was the case with a lot of minorities didn't necessarily show up. And so I think that in general, kind of that perception, again, back to that first girl that kind of made me realize, oh, I'm Mexican, is that we often tend to be in the background. And I think that's a position we've gotten pretty comfortable with. And I think we don't know our own power in a lot of ways. We are certainly a growing group in the United States that if we stood up and really organized, that we would have a very powerful voice. And so again, that's why I'm starting that process too. I certainly can't judge because although I've been consistent in voting, I haven't been consistently active. And so I think we all, especially as a Mexican American community, need to start recognizing that we have a voice and then start using it. It's not an area that we've been strong in the past, but I do think if we discover that and we move forward on that, there would be no stopping us. And one of the other things as far as what I said is brought out, you know, with this current presidency, it's not just the Mexican American community or the Hispanic community. One of the things I found is that, again, my project was just not one group of people. It was all different groups of people that felt disenfranchised. And I think a lot of those groups have come together and organized together, and difficult conversations are taking place. There's a group here in Indiana of women who became active after the election. And there's been a lot of conversations in that online group, and not all of them pretty. But I think as you learn to take these first steps, it's not always an easy or a pretty process. You know, as we all learn to walk as children, we fell a lot. And I think that's where we're at right now as people are taking these first steps. And I still cry when I call my senators and congressmen. I don't know why, but I get so passionate and I get so nervous. And then I start talking and I often start crying, especially after the DACA statement was made and all the chaos that occurred afterwards. I called and I just started bawling on the phone because I was begging that my representatives represent me. And I felt like I wasn't being represented in my own country. And so I was you know, really begging them to step up and do that. And maybe they will. You know, maybe me stepping up and doing something that feels uncomfortable will help them step up and do something that's uncomfortable, and that will be passed on. At least that's my hope, and that's what helps me continue to be positive, even as there's so much negativity around me.
And I hope more and more, especially Mexican American women, and it's totally my bias right now, as I'm also awakening and reinventing myself and connecting to this part of my own identity, I hope that more Mexican American women are willing to take that step out and to get uncomfortable. And those of us with the privilege of having citizenship in the United States, you know, being able to utilize that more willingly and, you know, just more intentionally to support, for example, DACA recipients, which is absolutely painful. And the deadline, you know, for renewal is coming up on October 5th. And so I know many of us are going to spend our time, you know, crying and just feeling the burden of that. And Ellie, we have a couple of minutes, and we actually have a question from a friend here in Indianapolis, from Charlene Alec. And she's asking, do you think that your art can be a medium to promote unity and healing in our community and in our country, and in what ways?
Well, that's certainly my hope. My hope, and again, the art is very specific for my community. If you look at it and you see the graphics that are part of it, that's actually the Indianapolis flag that's incorporated into each image. And I did that because, again, I wanted it to be personal, and I wanted people to feel a personal connection when they saw those images and say, this is my city, these are my neighbors. But certainly I think it translates for any community. And my hope in creating it is that people will recognize that we need to be unite as one community. And the name Out of Many One Community is, you know, has a long history in the United States and on our money. And I was speaking with someone when I was first kind of coming up with the idea of and the concept of this project, and somebody brought up that the phrase, and actually the phrase is Out of Many One. And I changed it to Out of Many One Community because I wanted to bring the community together. And my hope is for that unity, that we will recognize that, yes, this is an image of one person, but together we are one community. And one of the things you can actually see, the project is actually traveling all around the city throughout it started a couple months ago, and it'll continue through the end of the year. But not in every location or gallery where it's going to be presented can you see as clearly as you can on the website, but the lines all connect. And so the graphic that creates the flag actually also creates a graphic that connects all the images together. One of the other things that I think is really obscure that was part of my thinking is the images all have a fabric background, which actually wasn't there when I did the photo shoot. It's a part of a graphic that I added afterwards. And my thinking in adding that fabric was that we're all woven together as one community. And so it's a much more subtle way of expressing, again, that we are all tied together. The lines all connect. The fabric is woven together. You know, all of these people look very different and represent very different aspects of our community, but we are one community. When you put us all together, we are one. And when we start acting, I think that way, I think we'll be so much stronger.
Thank you, Ellie. And your work inspires me, and it excites me to have gotten this time to get to know you while people are listening in. And I wanted to share here that I'm excited to get to work with you more and more as I figure out what my role is in activism, and especially in doing work with Mexican American women. And so, you know, hopefully here soon I'll get started on that book club, you know, where we get to intentionally read about Mexican American women and their stories and come together with other Mexican American women here in Indianapolis and really, really get to lift up our voices that are often and have been invisible. So I want to lead people again to your website. Your website is elliesophia.com. That's www.elliesophia.com. You can also find Ellie Sophia's Facebook page by looking up Ellie Sophia Photography. And thank you. Thank you so much for being a part of this, Ellie. Is there anything you'd like to say before we end?
No, I appreciate your time. And yes, you can find me. I am, again, part of reinventing myself is figuring out all these different social media mediums. And so I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, and the handle for each of those is Ellie Sophia Pics. But you can also look up Ellie Sophia Photography and then obviously my website. And I'm doing some Halloween promotions, so don't get distracted if you go to my website and you see some of the work that I'm doing with that, the art that I've been mentioning throughout the program was under the tab Out of Many One Community. So thank you again, though, for letting me share. I really appreciate it.
Yes, of course. It's a pleasure. And you've been listening to The People Speak with your host, Elizabeth Valencia. And I'd like to thank our host again, Ellie Sophia Brown, and remind you to visit her website at elliesophia.com. Thank you all for listening and being a part of our show tonight and for having me as your host tonight again. Have a good night, friends.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.